Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
Good afternoon. So my topic is legal goods protected by war crimes. In my chapter, I will use the list of war crimes in the Rome Statute as an illustration of legal goods protected by war crimes. In this presentation, I will start with the kinds of legal goods, what kind of legal goods are protected by war crimes, and then I will talk a bit about when and how they are protected. The pertinent question here is if there are special aspects of legal goods protected by war crimes that, as a category, and also that of international concern. War crimes is a means to enforce the law of armed conflict or international humanitarian law. The development of the law of war crimes is separate from that of international humanitarian law. After the Second World War, as was mentioned repeatedly by previous speakers, the law of war, the international criminal law or law of war crimes, has been developed by ad hoc international tribunals and various treaties. Apart from the abstract connotation that war crimes are serious violations of IHL, the list of war crimes have been flexible. Have been flexible depending on the context. The ad hoc tribunal statutes enumerate examples of war crimes tailored for specific situations they are going to face. And the 1949 Geneva Conventions and the additional Protocol 1 established the grave breaches regime for general application. And then there are treaties on specific subjects, such as weapons or UN personnel or mission, which can also be sources of war crimes. So in the short and dynamic history of the law of war crimes, the ICC statute is the most recent attempt to make a comprehensive list, and it's also the longest list so far. So the provisions in the ICC, they draw on existing treaties. Their interpretation, therefore, need to be done taking consideration to the original context. Under Article 8 of the ICC statute, crimes are grouped according to their original sources, not according to substantive criteria. And many similar crimes, are similar or even almost identical, but they are not put next to each other. So I think it may be helpful to categorize the crimes according to the substantive legal goods or values they protect. And then we can maybe understand more the nature and scope of war crimes. So in my categorization, I make two big categories: war crimes in international and non-international armed conflict. I will focus on international armed conflict and talk briefly about war crimes in non-international armed conflict. So I make 10 categories of legal goods protected by war crimes in international armed conflict, which we will see in a minute. Yeah, I might as well get on. So the first category of legal good that I identified is against is that of human person. That includes crimes against the person, against the person of protected persons, and also civilians. So I do not make the distinction, as traditionally people do, between the law regarding protected persons and the law regarding conduct of hostilities. So in the war crime against person, I grouped all the crimes against the life, in physical or mental integrity, or freedom, dignity against persons. So now you can see more clearly that there are many provisions that I grouped under this category. And then the second category is also could be also human persons, but I separate it because of its peculiar nature. So it's about life and well-being of children. This is added to the Rome Statute with some controversy because it concerns primarily the treatment of persons of the nationality of this perpetrator of the state. It concerns the relationship between civilian citizens and their own state. I will come back to this in my analysis later. And the third one is right to fair trial. This is self-explanatory. And the fourth is conscience and loyalty to the state of nationality. The fifth is civilian population. So by saying that the values attached to survival, security, and well-being of civilian population, it seeks to distinguish this group from individual civilians because there are values attached to civilians as a collectivity in addition to individual civilians. And then there's property. So the property include public and private property. And then environment, medical functions or religious personnel. So this can also be categorized under persons and property, but I think it has a special aspect in terms of values, so I separated it. And also UN and humanitarian missions, they are also treated, they're also singled out in terms of the crimes that can be committed against them. And then finally, it's also a very peculiar kind of value that is protected by war crimes, that is identification system in the battlefield, confidence in the identification system. Most of it concerns the abuse of protected person's status, that is, that you pretend to be a civilian or injured or sick person, then kill a member of the adversary. And there's also why I group it under the identification system, because there's a conduct that I have difficulty to figure it out. It's the making improper use of the military insignia and uniform of the enemy. This, I think, it doesn't concern the protected status of certain persons, but it's sort of certain rule that recognized by states that should apply in armed conflict. So now going back, So going back to my presentation, to analyze the legal goods I just presented, I think the first special thing about the legal goods protected by war crimes is that it concerns both person and property. Genocide and crimes against humanity in particular, they are only concerned with human persons or groups. The utilitarian rationale of IHO not only seeks maximum preservation of human persons, but also property or materials. The second special aspect of most war crimes is the interests of enemy state. Of course, war crimes protect persons and property on individual and community level, but as how they were originally are, they are mostly concerned with the interests of enemy states. That is still true today. I think states have interests vested in their persons and property. So, and also the persons and property of the hostile party is usually, they are usually most vulnerable during the war. That's also a reason for war crimes concern. In the case of public property and building, state interests are particularly prominent. Punishment of individual criminal responsibility instead of collective reprisals spares the innocent and is important to maintain certain order in war so that it does not collapse into anarchy or total war. Today, there are also war crimes which primarily concern one's own citizens, as was mentioned, the war crime about use of child soldiers. Such act was prohibited under the 1977 Additional Protocol 1 to the Geneva Conventions, but they were not listed as a grave breach. So states at the time, they were not comfortable to label use of states' own children as soldiers as a war crime. It may be other crimes, but why should it be a war crime? So then it became a war crime in the Rome Statute in 1998, and 4 years later, the Statute of Special Court for Sierra Leone followed and also included the crime. Of course, the inclusion of this crime has empirical basis because it happened a lot, but whether we should call it a war crime is questionable, because traditionally it falls into the human rights regime instead of humanitarian law. There are also some war crimes originally and primarily protect enemy interests, but according to elements of crime of the Rome Statute, now they can also be interpreted to apply to civilians and objects of the attacking state itself or its allied states, such as attacks against the civilian population or using civilians as human shield or attacking cultural property, etc. It means that the protection of some fundamental legal goods is extended to internal relations during the war. Such extended concern is not entirely imagined. A state may destroy its own cultural property or sacrifice its own citizens or allied citizens, especially when it's trying to take back an occupied territory. For example, during the Second World War, British and American air bombing of the occupied French territory caused excessive civilian casualties compared to the military advantage gained. If it's assessed under the Rome Statute, it's very likely a war crime. Therefore, in addition to legal goods at individual and community level, war crimes, or typically war crime, protects the enemy state interests in international armed conflict. There has been evolution, we have seen, of the scope and nature of war crimes over the years, which is reflected in the Rome Statute. The next point is military necessity. So we have looked at the kinds of legal goods that are protected by war crimes. But a more important question, or not equally important question, is how and when they are protected so that they are different from ordinary crimes. The basic assumption underlying IHO and law of war crimes is that war should be fought in a limited way, which means parties to the armed conflict seek to defeat, not destroy, the enemy. David Luban calls it negative utilitarianism. To minimize pain is another way to maximize happiness. The protection of legal goods is restricted by the need to fight the war effectively. The primary rules of IHO treat persons differently according to the degree of threat to the enemy. Thus, those protected values are not the same to everyone at all times. So the war crime, for example, of causing excessive civilian death or injury in an attack against a military target does not punish harming of innocent civilian persons, but only when it's disproportionate to the military advantage gained. Property is protected to the extent that they're not military targets. So So quickly about non-international armed conflict. War crimes in non-international armed conflict, they are more recent. And they are, as you can see from this table, they are much less than those in international armed conflict. And they're mostly the same in substance to some war crimes in international armed conflict. The concerned, the concrete legal goods of war crimes in non-international armed conflict are no different than those in international armed conflict. The personal, social, and material costs of war crimes are the same. Instead of interests of enemy states, it's the interest of the adverse party, which are the primary concern of these war crimes. So finally, the question which legal goods protected by war crimes as a category are of of international concern has no definitive answer, because you can, as you can see, it's no longer only about interests of that is related to the enemy state. And war crimes, when committed in an isolated manner or on individual level, are recognized by the international community as crimes and punished by state courts regularly. But they may not be sufficient to harm the legal goods of the international community. The distinction was made also by Iona in the first presentation. So when they are committed as, the war crimes are committed as part of a plan or on large scale, as was particularly mentioned or focused on by Article 8, they may harm the general legal goods of international peace and security. Almost all war crimes punished at international level are of this kind. That completes my presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.